Good morning, everyone. Happy spring. This is one of those topics that's very spring-like, very encouraging. I like the word courage. Courage comes from a word that means heart. So it's a good time of year to take heart. And I think that's why we come to services like this, is to kind of remind us every week of how we can take heart and how we can have the right attitude to help us kind of tune into the joy that we're all seeking. This is a great topic along those lines, because that's what Jesus is talking about in this particular case. You know, one thing that I kind of regret is that being 2,000 years ago that Jesus lived, you know, there's a tendency to have everything be all kind of formal with this kind of, you know, King James English language translated through the Greek, you know, originally and stuff like that. So you don't get the feeling of just the alive kind of joy that it must have been like, unless you really kind of have to dig down there. So Jesus talking to people around him, you know, you can imagine a time like that when people were a little bit kind of stuck in the idea that God was distant, you know, some figure way up there kind of, and they weren't worthy, and maybe after this life they could sort of, you know, relate a little bit to that distance sort of. And Jesus came to sort of blow all that away and say, you know, first of all, God is right inside within you. God is your Father. Second of all, you aren't anything separate from that. You know, you can imagine him sitting around saying, you know, nobody went up to heaven that didn't come from heaven, meaning you came from heaven. This was new, kind of, to people. In fact, I can feel in myself being raised sort of with the, you know, Catholic upbringing. It was a positive experience, but still there was that sort of impression, not the message that Jesus taught, but sort of the way it's gotten a little formalized in the, you know, several centuries since then. The idea that somehow we're sinners, we're different from God, we have to sort of feel like we, you know, have to do the right things in order to sort of get a little taste of God after this life. And that's just, you know, we sort of know inside that there's got to be something more than that. That's why a lot of us are here, really, is because we just sort of knew that. But the good news is that that's what Jesus was saying. That's what all the great masters say. And so if we can tune in a little bit to the spirit with which they communicate with us, they have great news to share, a very springtime-like message, which is that the kingdom of God is within. You have that right here, right now. And so the important thing for us is, first of all, to know that. You know, there's a sage named Patanjali from India that described the process of spiritual awakening as one of remembrance. The word he used was smriti. I love that word, smriti. Be a great spiritual name. Kind of reminds me of a name that, you know, somebody in New York would have that runs a deli. You know, hey, this is my pal, Smriti, you know, but it's also just a great name, remembrance. So whenever we remember, it's kind of like the light bulb goes on, you know, oh yeah, that's right. That's who I am. That's where I came from. So the important first step is remembrance. Then the second step, and the kind of the bridge between knowing things intellectually and really living a spiritual life, is how to practice that day by day. And, you know, as always, when we're getting ready for a talk like this, we have a chance to learn these things, sort of. God sort of gives us a chance. Okay, how are you going to do? So, you know, maybe you've been in this situation too, where you can find yourself getting, this isn't me, this is somebody else I'm talking about here, but, you know, find yourself getting a little sort of, maybe cranky, you know, a little weary, tired, sort of whining, you know, kind of thing. Maybe not you either, but somebody you know, perhaps. And, you know, it's so tempting, you know, it's just so tempting. We just want to relish in that. But maybe you've discovered that it just doesn't get you anywhere, you know? I mean, it maybe just a little bit, you can sort of hope that it's going to do some good. But, you know, when new people, I don't know if anybody's new here today, but there's part of us that have been around for a while where we kind of want to say, go home, you don't know what you're getting into. Because once you come in, I'm kidding. So. Because once you really get onto the spiritual path, you realize you just can't get away with it anymore. You just can't get into kind of relishing in the ego anymore. So on the one hand, you just can't go home again. You know, you realize you just can't do it anymore. You'll keep trying. I keep trying, you know. But it just falls flat. It's humorous sometimes how quickly it falls flat. And you just have to say, well, okay, thanks, God. That was real clear, you know. But then the great news behind that is that the joy that you feel from letting go of that limited self-identity, and this is what Jesus was trying to say and all the great masters try to tell us, is that you let go of that mistaken identity. and you realize what your true identity is. You are one with God. We came from God. We are God. That's what all the great masters say. And you can sort of hear it, but the way that you actually experience it inside is by trying to be godlike. So in the middle of any situation that's a test or a challenge, the important thing is just when you realize that you're stuck. I mean, this is the whole story of the Bhagavad Gita, the whole battle between light and darkness. We experience that all the time inside. Whenever we get in that stuck place and we're tempted to either relish in the ego or do something else that may prove out a little better, just, I don't know, tune into the people that have been successful in that. Whoever inspires you, Yogananda, Christ, you know, Kriyananda, just whatever spiritual figures just impress you with the success that they've had living that kind of joy. And then tune into that. That doesn't mean that you have to either be Christ-like or not at all, you know, but it means, okay, how can I have a little bit more of that inside? You know, I mean, again, this 2,000-year separation, you think of Christ-like as being sort of somehow different than us, sort of like on a mountaintop or something like that. No, it means being like us as happy as we could possibly be. You know, fortunately, we've had a chance to see Yogananda, hear Yogananda, read his stuff. You know, it's so heartful. It's so encouraging, so inspiring to see a disciple like Swami Kriyananda and to see other examples who are trying to live the spiritual life, who have been, you know, kind of walking this path a long time. Tune into those people. Tune into the friends around you that meditate a lot, that have a lot of joy inside. You know, hang out with them. Soak up their vibrations. Just even in meditation, try to tune into Yogananda's attitude. Try to tune into the inspiring attitudes of people around you. You know, what would they do in a situation like this? How would they, you know, there's a term Swami Kriyananda uses, delight. How would they experience delight in this situation? So what I'd like to offer you all is, in the middle of any kind of challenge that you're facing this coming week, and this is easy in springtime, you know, because in wintertime, it's real easy to get sort of locked inside. But springtime, all the blossoms are happening and all the beautiful colors and, you know, Robert Bush's altar here that just sort of, wow, splash of delight, you know, sort of thing. In the middle of any situation that's challenging where you're sort of stuck and wound up and about to react in an ego sort of way that isn't going to work, just think, okay, wait a minute. Where's the delight in here? What Jesus said was that the kingdom of God is within you. That means right now, somewhere inside, there's a piece of me that can relate to that light, that can feel delighted. I mean, maybe it's just having a good sense of humor and saying, well, here I am again, totally lost. But fortunately, I'm your child, I came from you, and you've got to rescue me. So right now, you know. But at least we can stop from sort of reacting the wrong way and just sort of step back and say, okay, I am going to side with the light. First of all, that makes you a lot more fun to be around. People are more delighted to be around you when you're sort of looking for that. Okay, there's a the other side is that energy is a quality that's important. Yogananda came to remind us that this is a time of energy. And by tuning into that, we kind of get on the wavelength. We're like surfers that sort of catch the right wave. So we can't just know things intellectually. We have to feel them in our heart, and we have to put energy behind it. And just those of you that practice the energization exercises, there's a prayer that goes along with that of Yogananda's. And, you know, in a pinch, when all else fails, just think of that prayer, because the elements in that have it all. O infinite spirit, recharge my body with thy conscious cosmic energy. Okay, energy, number one. What do I need to do? All right, I need to get some energy going here. Recharge my mind with thy concentration and determination. Okay, so I'll concentrate, you know, I'll meditate twice a day. I'll focus. I'll sort of try to not get scattered all over the place, like Rick's reading there about just kind of scattering the senses all over the place. You know, the lake goes dry. Okay, I'll try to focus my energies. I'll try to lift it up, think of God. I'll try to remember who I am. Yogananda also sometimes in the readings, besides saying, recharge my mind with thy concentration and determination, says, and smiles. I like that too. Recharge my mind with smiles. That's a great attitude to take sometimes. Okay, how can my mind feel more smiles in this situation? Finally, he says, recharge my soul with thy ever new joy. So you've got what Jesus is saying here. Okay, we've got to feel energy. We've got to feel concentration. We've got to lift that up in meditation through our heart, offer it up to God. And then in doing that, we experience God's joy. We experience that heaven within that is our birthright. It's where we came from. It's what we're meant to feel all the time. The chant that I did earlier on, Yogananda's chant in Samadhi, all the phrases around the room here refer to him reminding us what the state of cosmic consciousness is like, called Samadhi. And Sabhi Kalpa Samadhi, this is esoteric stuff, but it's when we sort of have to feel separate in order to feel God's life and joy. Nirbhikalpa Samadhi is the higher state, where we can feel God's presence inside and still live. And that's what Jesus meant when he said, even so, the Son of Man who is in heaven. That's all of us at our best. You know, we're able, this is not really a time for most of us when we're supposed to separate ourselves from life in order to feel God's joy. This is a time, generally speaking, where we need to feel God's joy and express it on the planet and show other people how to do that too. And so, and then the final part of the prayer of Yogananda's during energization is, eternal youth of body and mind, abide in me forever and forever, in the way he says it. And that's the other side of it, is that, I don't know, sometimes I sort of feel like I want to be rescued, you know? You ever feel that way too? I don't know, maybe it's just me, but, you know, you're in a situation that's a little tough, you just want to be rescued. You just want to just have it go away or have yourself go away or something. But usually, you know, if you're ever wondering what your dharma is, you know, we tend to paint a bright picture of how my dharma lies somewhere else. Maybe if I go to Switzerland, you know? Maybe if I go somewhere other, it's going to be different. Now, generally speaking, this is, you know, one of those other bits of news that, you know, gosh, I wish I could tell you something else, but usually your dharma is what's right on the plate in front of you. You know, that's your dharma, generally speaking. And so by looking at that and one way or another saying, okay, God, you gave this to me. This is from you for me to feel delight in. How can I grow in order to experience more of your joy? That's the whole point in all the circumstances that come to us. And when we finally get around to that point of sort of saying, okay, I accept it, it's from you, how can I feel you in it? Well, what happens is we relax. And all of a sudden, God starts flowing through, and we just start dealing with what's in front of us, and then we feel his joy. And step by step by step, we're feeling the kingdom of God within us, and we're expressing that all the time to everyone around us. It's said in one of the Indian scriptures that one should live in such a way that you are detached from the world, you know, you do the right practices, you do your duty, and you wish to live for 100 years. And that's important to realize too. You know, we need to feel God's joy and we need to live it in the world with joy completely in such a way that we would wish to share that joy with everyone for 100 years. Rick?
Well, it was about 2 weeks ago. I was in India, and I got an email from Asha. And she says, I'm going to be gone on the 25th, and so I need someone to do service. How about you and Joe? And she says, don't bother to email back. I'll just expect that you want to do it. So we got drafted into this one. But she said, share India with the people. So I said, oh, of course, that's easy. Now, we went to India. There was only 4 of us from this colony, but there were 300 people that went to the Mahasamadhi retreat. And probably 200 from all over the world. And it was a fabulous retreat. But my major reason for going was to see Swami Kriyananda. His health had been poor. I wasn't sure he was going to actually make it into the States this year. So when I knew that, I thought, I'm going to go and see him no matter what it takes. So we got to Delhi, I think on Tuesday, and on Thursday we started the retreat, the celebration. And Swami was not doing well. He had inner ear problems. He couldn't stand up. He was vomiting on and on and on. So it was unclear if he'd even come to the celebration. But the closer it got to the time, He figured he could make it on Friday. So at noon on Friday, he came in a wheelchair, was helped up the stairs to the stage, had to sit down in a chair, and drank some water, and then he began to talk to us. And I have to tell you, those 10 minutes, the first 10 minutes of the talk, was all I needed from India. It was just the deepest experience that I had during that whole trip. Being there with Swami, because he's our link to Yogananda. Yogananda is our link to God. And it was just so palpably there. It was just like one of my best meditations. And so from then on, I just had a great time in India because it was taken care of. And there was a number of very good talks that were given during that celebration. Ones that struck me most were the Indians. There was probably 8 or 10 different Indian groups that talked, and they were sharing what they were doing for the work in India. And it was so inspiring because they totally owned that experience. They were standing right there and sharing with the audience how they were moving forward on the spiritual path, Ananda India. It was fabulous to see. It looks like India is very well established. We were there 2 years ago in 05 for the celebration, and there was maybe 18 people working there, and they were really stretched to the limit. They were the wrong color. So this time it was so much better. There was at least, I don't know, maybe close to 40 people that are permanently there. Well, permanent, you know, permanent Ananda is. But they were there giving their lives to God for India, and there was a flow to it. There was a sequence. There was a feeling that it would continue and that India was well established. That was just really uplifting for me. Haridas and Roma, they look better than I've ever seen them. Dharmadas, Nirmala, they look great. They're just in charge and everything's moving forward. And another talk that was really inspiring from that weekend was Dharmadas and Nirmala talking about going out to Hyderabad and Pune, a couple of new places that they've not done meditation programs for. And so they went out to these areas and shared, and they had great responses. And then the last talk, Swami Kriyananda, who was feeling much better at the end of this, it was Sunday when he came and talked with us. And he encouraged the Indian people in Yogananda's approach to the spiritual life to go out and form communities, start schools, and do all the things that Yogananda brought. Because he said Yogananda was not a personality. He was a flow of energy for you to find God. And that was the most important thing. And so that was the end of that ceremony, that whole celebration. And then we had 4 days in the middle before our Kriya retreat started, the first international Kriya retreat in India. So Durga put a group together, found a guide, and said, how would you like to go to Rishikesh? It'll only be like $150 extra. And we thought, you know, you spend $1,300 to get to India, of course you're going to spend $150 to get to Rishikesh. So she had guides, she had places to stay, she had picked up the train tickets, everything was ready for us. So Monday morning at about 5 a.m., we got together, jumped onto our cabs and took off for the train station, got into Haridwar, a little around noontime, I think it was. And we had the next 3 days to experience Haridwar, Dehradun, Rishikesh. And we had a great time there. The first thing we did after getting off the train was we went to Keshabananda's ashram right there in Haridwar. And there's a portion of Lahiri's ashes in a nice little shrine right there. And we all got to sit and meditate in that shrine. And for many people, it was just a transforming experience, just the high point. And it's just this little shrine on the side of the road that you stop in. So we paid our respects there and then went up to Rishikesh. And we saw a number of different teachers and saints. We saw Vanamali Devi, who will be here in the next month and a half doing programs at the village and at East West Books. She supplied some of the words for our play, our Krishna play, when we had that a few years back, the children's play. And Bodhichittananda, who was just a really interesting fellow, we got to sit and talk with him for a while. He has this little kutir right on, you know, the side of a very steep bank of the river Ganges. And you can just, you could step off about that far and you could be in the river like 40 feet down. It was just a fabulous place. And he served us tea and we chanted. We had a great time with him. And Gyanananda, we got to meet Gyanananda, a longtime devotee. And Vanamali Devi sat and talked with us for over an hour. She explained devotion. I asked her, "What's devotion, Ma?" And she says, "Well, you can't talk about devotion. You have to talk about Dharma first." So she explained Dharma. And then she says, "Now you have to talk about karma. Where's your karma? And now after you understand that, then you can talk about devotion." So it was just, you know, we had a great experience with her. And we also stopped at a Kriya mandir that they're building, Shankarananda. Yeah. He's a Kriyaban through Lahiri, through Yukteswar in Puri. And he's been through, he was at the village, and he came just through here a month ago, I think it was. But anyway, it's this fabulous mandir that he's making. It's round. It's got a domed roof. Huge pictures of the masters, or huge marble statues of the masters, where you can just sit and meditate. And we all did. We had just a great time there. And that space will be open for anyone who wants to go there to meditate. It'll be a year or so until it's done, but it has a great feeling now. And then the last day, we had a purification right there in the Ganges. So Sadhana Devi did the purification for us. And we took these little boats of flowers and incense and sailed them out, sailed our karma out onto the Ganges to get rid of it. It was a very nice meditation, a very nice experience. The Ganges up in Rishikesh is much cleaner than many other parts of India. It just looks like snow melt. It's kind of a green color coming off the mountains. Worthwhile experience. Anyway, from then we went on to Vashishta Guha, which is some caves about 20 miles up the river. And there, saints have been meditating for, you know, 23 years straight like that, and reputed to have rishis walled up behind so that they won't be disturbed. They've been meditating there for centuries. But we got the chance to meditate there, and that was fun. And then hang out by the river. And a little further down around the corner, Swami Kriyananda spent weeks or maybe a month or so in seclusion. And we got a chance to sit in that cave for a little bit. And that one was really inspiring. We just really felt that vibration. It was an excellent thing in the trip. And that, I guess that was all we did in Rishikesh. And so we got back onto the, well, on the way back, it was kind of fun. It was getting late, so they were worried about us getting to the train on time. So our guide says, "I know a shortcut." And he took us by this waterway and had to bribe the people at the gate, you know, the same old pay somebody kind of thing. But we had this great drive down this huge waterway, and we stopped at a reserve that had elephants. Apparently there's wild elephants around there, that's what they said, but of course we didn't see any. And there were two elephants. There was one of them that was giving people rides. We didn't have the time to take a ride, so we got to pat the elephant and take 10 rupee notes and put it in the trunk, and the trunk went up and gave it to the guy. And watch this little, this is a 70-year-old elephant. And this was kind of just a normal age for an elephant. And then there was a little one, a little 17-year-old elephant that was here. So we had our experience of elephants. And then we jumped back in the cabs, off to the train, back to Delhi. And then the next day was Thursday, and we're into our Kriya. And we had guided Kriya meditations, which were really excellent. Jaya would lead them, and there were some changes with the Kriya. They're no longer giving the second, third, and fourth Kriya as a group. They only give the second Kriya. So after you get your first Kriya, the second Kriya will be only that one, and then it'll be another initiation for the third and fourth. And so there was a lot of time spent on that second Kriya, and it really helped deepen it for me. It's when you get all of them at once, it just kind of, it's a little harder to get behind that whole experience. But the great feeling from that experience, from our Kriya initiation, was all of the Kriya bonds from all over the world coming together and meditating together. It was really inspiring. And there were some excellent talks given. We had Jyotish and Devi gave excellent talks. All these are on the internet, so if you get a chance, go download these or sit and watch them on your computer. It's really worthwhile. It's how to take the Kriya and live it in your daily life. And then Dave Warner gave an excellent talk too. And he was talking a little bit about what Joe was saying about if you want to be inspired, see people around you who have been on the path longer and see what changes they've actually had in their lives. He said, we have before and after pictures. He says, he's talking about Dave, my before picture is I'm holding this little placard with a bunch of numbers on it, and I'm being processed for some jail. You'd never expect that from Dave Warner, but that was 30 years ago. It's the oddest thing. That's my before picture, says Dave. He's in charge of Kriya for the U.S. So you think about Jaya, you think about Jyotish. You just see these people, and you see how they've changed, and it's just really inspiring. And then the last talk that Swami gave was on that Sunday, and he talked for an hour, and he talked about Kriya and Yogananda, and bringing that Kriya experience out to as many people as we can. And he said, forget your karma. Everyone has these huge lakes of karma. He says, go deep here, this spot right now. Go deep, be free in this lifetime. He says, be Jivan Mukta. Doesn't matter how much karma you have. It's up to you to do it now. We love that talk. And the best part about it for me was, as he was leaving, he just showed this love to everyone. It was just so clear that he had this absolute perfect love for everyone in that building and for all of us. So to leave you with something, I would encourage you, when he comes in June, to spend any amount of time with him that you can. He won't be around long. He's a direct link to Yogananda, a direct link to the Masters. He will be here sometime early June in the community. Come and meditate on the grounds. Even if you don't see him, just to feel him on the grounds. We have shrines there. We've got a temple there. If he does something publicly, we'll make sure everyone knows about it. But we'll have also programs at the village. Try and get into one of those programs. Stay at one of the local towns around the area. It will be pretty packed, but it's definitely worth seeing them. There'll be a book launch in Los Angeles. They'll launch Los Angeles, Ananda Los Angeles, and his latest book. And we'll probably have a bus which goes from here. So it might be a huge bus of all of us going down together. So keep that as a possibility. It'll be sometime in July. And then he'll come back through. But just keep track of whatever his schedule is, and spend any time that you can with him. It will definitely help your spiritual experience, your spiritual life. God bless.